Okay, so tonight I want to talk a little bit about Hechsher Kalim, koshering dishes, koshering utensils. It's an interesting topic, and most people only really think about this around Pesach time. Because Pesach time, that's when we, very often, Klal Yisrael, you know, we have the minhag to kosher our Kalim for Pesach. Nowadays it's even becoming less and less prevalent because since, I don't know, we as a community are getting more affluent, or the price of dishes and pots and pans and things like that is dropping. I'm not sure what it is, but either way, we live in kind of like the disposable era, and more people are stocking up on Pesach, you know, pantries, and they have a Pesach Pesach dishes and Pesach pots and Pesach this and Pesach that, and you know, you don't even have so much so many dishes that need hagalah, need to be kashered for Pesach. Occasionally people still want to, you know, bechers and things like that, but you don't find it as much anymore, I think, as it was. But it does exist, and in fact, many of the halachos that discuss Hechsher Kalim are in Hilchos Pesach, because that's where many of the halachos are discussed. We're not going to focus too much on Pesach. Some of the halachos are different when it comes to kashering for Pesach, because if you keep in mind, when you kasher for Pesach, whatever chametz is balua, is absorbed in the walls of the kli, is not yet prohibited. It's still mutter, right? It's before Pesach. Chametz is only prohibited on Pesach. So it's a funny concept when it comes to Pesach. You're kashering something that's not really treif. There's nothing wrong with it right now. I think the word is expunging it from its chametz properties. When it comes to something getting trafed up, you know what we talk about, you know, you do something in your kitchen by accident and a spoon becomes trafe, so then that's what we're a little bit more familiar with. That's what we'll focus on a little bit more tonight in terms of koshering. But some of the things do come, as you'll see, some of the things do come from Hilchos Pesach. I still remember studying in Eretz Yisrael. You know, in Israel you see a lot of things that you never see here in America, you know, for various reasons. But when it comes, you know, close to Pesach there, so they have like, Hagola stations set up everywhere. You know, you walk on the street in Mea Shearim and Geula, and you have just a boiling pot or cauldron of boiling water just on the sidewalk, and, you know, a few shkalim, and you can do Hagola on your dishes. So you don't find that so much. I think, you know, you probably need some sort of a variance here in Nassau County to do that, you know, on Central Avenue. But, so, you know, yeah, exactly, right. You know, it'd have to be supervised. And, you know, in Israel, you know, we're a little bit more lax about these things. But anyway, so the source of all these halachos really comes, and this is why I was intrigued to do this, to touch on this topic, since we just talked about Tevilas Kalim not long ago. So this is really a follow-up topic to Tevilas Kalim, because the source of this concept of Hagala, of Kashering Kalim, Hechsher Kalim, really comes from the same psukim. Comes from the same psukim as Tevilas Kalim. And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense, because we're talking about the Klei Midyan. We're talking about following the war with Midyan, and you know we merited to get the spoils of the Midianite army, and they have pots and pans, and those things not only needed to be toveled, as we spoke about last time, but they needed to be kosher. You know, these things needed to be kosher. So that's what the psukim write in the very beginning here in Parshas Matos, in source number one. Vayomer Elazar HaKohen El Anshei HaTzava HaBoim LaMilchama. So Elazar HaKohen tells the soldiers who've come to war. Zos chukas haTorah shetziva Hashem es Moshe. This is, and we spoke about last time, this concept, the terminology of the chukas haTorah, which is used, which is not a common expression. That's only used twice in the Torah, but this is the chukas haTorah that Hashem commanded Moshe. Achas hazov yesakosef esanechoshes esabarzel esabedil esahofares. Those, we said, are the six types of metals that require tevilas kalim. And now this is the important pasuk for us in pasuk Chav Gimel. Kol davar asher yavova eish taaviru vaeish v'taher. Any item, any kli, any utensil, vessel that's used with fire, and we'll have to see how the Rishonim, how the Mefarshim understand this, but any utensil that's used with fire, ta'aviru va'esh v'taher, you pass it through fire and it becomes pure. So we see this concept of it's being used with fire, so in order to kasher it, in order to cleanse it, so to speak, from the impurities, you have to pass it through fire. Ach b'mei nida yischata, and here's where the Torah introduces, but even in that case, where you're koshering it, you still have to immerse it in a mikveh. you still have to do tevilas kelim. In addition to kashering it, there are two steps that are needed. And anything that's not used with fire, right? It's not used with fire, so it does not need to be kashered with fire, and you just have to immerse it in a mikvah. Okay. Now, the question is, how do we understand these two phrases? On the one hand, we have kol davar asher yavova esh, taviruva esh v'taher. Anything that is used with fire, you have to pass through fire in order to purify it. And then we have at the end of the pasuk, v'kol asher lo yavova esh, taviruva mayim. Anything that's not used with fire is used with water. And there's a big machlokes, Rishonim, really, you know, three major approaches, really, how to understand this pasuk, really, you know, focusing a little bit more in the beginning of the pasuk, of kol davar sheyavova esh. What is this esh that we're referring to? What does it mean, something that's used with fire? So here's the question. Are we talking about things that are used on an open fire? We're talking about things like, the spit that's used for the shish kebab, you know, for the shawarma. That's what we're talking about. We're roasting meat on an open fire, so we're talking about that metal spit, that shfud, as the poskim describe it, which is used on an open fire, or let's say the equivalent would be grates of a grill, something that's used on an open fire. Or are we talking about something that's used with hot water? So you have a pot that's used with hot water. It might not be subject to the open fire. I mean, nowadays we have a gas range, so we're a little bit more subject to the open fire. But imagine you take a pot that's used with water and you're sticking it in the oven, or you're sticking it in a crock pot or something like that, where it's not necessarily used with an open flame. It's not used with an open fire per se, but it's used to cook things in. You know, you cook something in it, and there's obviously heat here that's being used to cook, and the heat is heating up the water, but there's water involved. So what are we talking about? Is the ash just, you know, things that are subject to an open fire? Or are we talking about pots and pans that are not just subject to an open fire, but might be, you know, might cook using heat and hot liquid? So it's a big machlokas rishonim how to understand this. The She'iltos, which was written by Rav Achaigon, one of the Gaonim, in source number 2, and he wrote Al HaTorah, he wrote on the Parshios, but it was mostly halachic issues that came up in the Parsha that he would relate. So this is in Parshas Matos, where this Parsha of Klei Midyan appears. So he writes, Dichsiv, in source number 2, Kol davar sheyovo va'esh tavir va'esh v'taher, what is that referring to? Kigon shfudim ve'askelaos. Spit, right? Like a spit. A grate. Something that's used on an open fire. He makes no mention of any type of pot. He only makes mention of things that are used on an open fire, and it sounds like those things are what the Torah is referring to when it says, Taviru va'esh v'taher. Anything else, like a pot or something that's used with water, is not explicitly referred to in the pasuk according to the She'iltos. Okay? You have to learn it out. Chazal have to learn it from the Gemara. The Gemara has a concept of kibol o kach polto, that just like the same manner, the same method in which a kli absorbed blios, in which a kli absorbed, you know, some sort of absorptions, so it also will, you know, will purge it will expunge those absorptions as well. The same manner in which it brought them in, it will bring them out.
So when you say the pot that's used boiling water,
right?
It's chicken soup.
Yeah.
But that same pot is being heated underneath by a fire. See, back then, I guess pits and grills were the thing to cook with.
Correct. Right.
Now much less. Now it's seasonal, but most right. of that cooking is done on an open fire.
Right. Right.
Pot.
Right, so then, when they cooked with pots, they obviously didn't have a stovetop the way we have a stovetop, and what they used to do is essentially they would cook, you know, it was mostly coals, you know, they would have a coal oven, and they're at the top of the oven, you learn the Mishnayos, especially in Shabbos, that discuss these things, and at the top of the oven there was like a little hole where they would insert the pot, you know, it would go in, you know, that the pot would fit in, into that hole, and it would not come into contact directly with fire. So it was subject to the heat, obviously, of the coals, and that's what cooked the food. But there was liquid in the pot, and it was, you know, you had the heat coming up from the coals underneath, and that's what would heat it. You know, the modern day equivalent would be, let's say you're cooking something, you're cooking something that's liquidy in an oven. So let's say you're making a chicken that's very liquidy. It's cooked in sauce, right? You know, so you immerse the chicken in sauce and you stick it in the oven. So it's being cooked with heat. Obviously, there's heat coming, you know, from the heating element in the oven, but it's not subject to an open fire. It's not being exposed to an open fire. So that would be the modern day equivalent. But you're right, something that's sitting literally on top of a stovetop is being subject to a fire in that sense. the only chiluk, though, the only distinction would be that, you know, in the case of a spit, so there the open fire is not only is the spit exposed to the open fire, but the spit and the food are exposed to the open fire. When you have the case of a pot sitting on a stovetop, it's true that the pot is coming into contact with the fire, but the food is not. The food is all inside the pot. So that is one distinction, even today, between pots and, let's say, something like a spit, you know, would be a little bit different. Because there, you can imagine the spit with, you know, the fire is literally, you know, like a grill, right? You have a grill with the fire literally right underneath the grill, and you have the hamburger sitting on the grill. So there, you have the fire that's really, you know, really roasting the blios into that metal, you know, so to speak. Whereas when it comes to a pot, it's a little bit of a different mechanism.
But if you think back to the barbecue, the old-fashioned barbecue briquettes,
okay,
there was no fire.
The coal, the coals. Right. Correct. Right. So that would be more similar to like the old-fashioned kiras, you know, the stoves that they had in the times of the Mishnayos. Right. That would be like the equivalent to that. Right. Now Rashi doesn't understand that way. Rashi understands the psukim that taviru va'esh is not literally an open fire. Esh means heat. So however it's exposed to heat, whether it's exposed to an open fire or whether it's exposed to heat and it's cooking with like a pot with liquid, you know, and it's cooking because of the heat from the coals or whatever other heat source, that's all included in what the Torah says, Ta'aviru Va'esh. And that's what Rashi says in source number 3. If you look at the second little paragraph there in Rashi, Ta'aviru Va'esh, Kiderech Tashmisho Hagalaso. The way that it's used, that's how you kasher it. Mashe Tashmisho Al Yidei Chamin Yagilenu B'chamin. If it's used with hot water, so then the way to kasher it is with hot water, with boiling hot water, which we'll talk about a little bit more. Umashe Tashmisho Al Yidei Tzli, and anything that's used with an open fire, it's roasted. Then kigon hashfud haaskila, like a spit. Then you love nenu ba'or. Then you have to do libun, right? You have to subject it to a fire in order to kasher it. So that's how Rashi understands the pasuk. And then finally, we have the approach that the Ramban mentions, where the Ramban seems to only focus on the liquid, and he says in source number 4, ulefichah hutzruchu rabbi seinu lefaresh shezua tahara lehagila meisurei hamaachalos shebalu biyad hagoyim. That the whole purpose of these psukim is to teach us about Hagala. That's what the psukim are teaching us. Taviru va'esh, right? Kol davar sheyavo va'esh is a reference to Hagala. So it doesn't necessarily mean an open fire. So here we seem to have a three-way machlokes, and again, this is a little bit of more of an academic point, because in the end of the day, all these ways are going to be valid ways of kashering, depending on how the item is used. But in terms of at least academically, theoretically, what the pasuk is referring to, it seems to be a three-way machlokes, how to understand this pasuk of kol davar asher yavo va'esh. Are we referring specifically to an open fire? Are we referring on the other side of the spectrum specifically to something, to a hot liquid, right? Something, you know, where food is cooked with hot liquid, and then you have the sheet in the middle where it's really referring to both, and that's the way Rashi explains it. But again, as I said, it's more of a little bit of a more academic point, because in essence, all three approaches are valid nowadays, and we have these concepts of what we call Hagala, which is kashering through the use of boiling hot water, right? Just like when I cook chicken, or when I cook noodles, or when I cook chicken soup, I'm cooking it in boiling hot water. So the way that I kasher those utensils that are used with liquid is with boiling hot water. And then conversely, when I'm talking about things that were used to cook with an open flame, so then those things have to be kashered with a flame. Those things have to be kashered with what we call libun. And we'll talk about each one independently. When it comes to Hagala, if we think about Hagala first, which is kashering through the boiling hot water, so the goal, you know, what are we doing when we do Hagala? You know, you take this, imagine you trafed up a spoon, right? You took a milchik spoon, and you stirred your fleishik meatballs, right? It doesn't get more trafed than that, okay? So you really trafed up, there's no shiloh here, you don't even have to call the rabbi, you know for sure that it's traf, and now I just have to kasher this spoon, right? I have to kasher this spoon. So I'm gonna stick it in boiling water, and we'll talk about some of the mechanics of exactly how to do that. But we know that you have to immerse it in boiling water. What's the purpose? What's being done when you immerse this spoon, this treif spoon now, in the boiling water? So the Shach writes very clearly, in the name of the Ra'ah, quotes the Tor, but it's really in the name of the Ra'ah, and he writes towards the end of source number 5, the Hevi Yodea, the Achzaras Kivshonos, which I don't want to talk about right now, that's a little bit of a more complex type of kashering, Eino hechsher ki hag'ola b'kli matchos. He said it's not similar to hag'ola. And here the shach in a line, quoting the Ra'ah, tells us what hag'ola is all about. Dehasam hu lahaflit ma shebala. The purpose of hag'ola is to get this kli to spit out, to regurgitate, so to speak, those absorptions that it absorbed. Right? So I have this spoon, which was a milchik spoon. I stick it in my hot meatballs and I stir the meatballs. The absorptions from those fleishik meatballs went into my spoon. Now I've got milchiks and fleishiks in there. I have a big mess. It's basar b'chalav, it's treif. And now I have to get everything out of that spoon. I have to get those absorptions out of that spoon. And the chiddush of the Torah, really, is that the way that we get those absorptions out of the kli, right? Out of the, let's assume now, let's just talk about metal now, because it's easy to talk about. But we're talking, right, the way to get it out is the same method that you use to cook. So just like I'm using hot liquid to cook, I have to use hot liquid to get it out. That's the idea behind this. Now, one very important thing is that this only works, hagala, and this is something that sometimes people are not aware of, but hagala only works when it comes to blios. It only works to get out the absorptions. But let's say I have something be'en, I have something that's actual residue that's caked onto this dish. You know, sometimes you use a dish for 5 years, and, you know, even though you wash it, but sometimes, you know, you have little stains that are hard to get off, or, you know, bits of residue that are hard to get off. Hagala doesn't help you for those things. Hagala doesn't help you. Hagala only helps to remove that which is absorbed by the kli. But anything that's caked onto the kli, anything that's sitting on the kli, right, Hagala is not going to help you. And in fact, Rashi tells us, Rashi and Chumash already, tells us that what's the language that the Torah uses? Ach es hazahav, right, coming to, it sounds like it's even coming to exclude something. Right, what does it mean? Ach es hazahav. So Rashi quotes, one of the interpretations that Rashi quotes in source number 6, he writes, V'rabo senu amru, ach es hazahav lomar, shetzarich lahavir chaluda shelo kodem shiagilenu. You have to clean it. You have to clean this dish before you do hagala. Before you do hagala, it has to be clean, really spotlessly clean. Not only that, but any rust. If the item had rusted, you have to scrape off the rust. You have to sand off the rust of that kli. V'zeh lashon ach. He says that's the nature of the language of ach. Ach is coming to exclude, right? The language of ach always comes to minimize, to exclude. Shelo yehei sham chaluda. It's coming to teach you that there can't be any rust, there can't be any schmutz, can't be any dirt, any residue on that kli. Acha mateches yehiye kimo shehu. It has to be. It has to be that it's just the metal the way that it is without any residue. And that's something that's important whenever we do hagala, whether we're doing it, you know, in our kitchens because we trafed up a spoon, whether we're doing it before Pesach. It's important to keep in mind that the dishes have to be clean, because hagala only works for the absorptions. It doesn't work for any residue. So we have to make sure that they're clean. Now, clean, you know, a person can drive themselves nuts, you know, trying to make sure that a kli is clean, especially one that's been used several times or for several years. So clean means that there's no residue that you can feel with your finger. So if you run your finger over it and it's smooth and you don't feel anything, but I look and it's stained. You know, sometimes you know oil sometimes will stain a pot, stain a pan, or something like that. If you can't feel it, you know, and you scratch it, there's nothing there. So then just the appearance of something, the appearance of a stain is not a problem. But we're talking about something that you can feel. If you run your finger over it and you feel that there's something there, that's what we're talking about. And you might have to go at it with steel wool, you know, to do it. I had to kasher something recently, and I had to buy steel wool, and I'm scrubbing and scrubbing, you know, to get it clean. But it's really only that which you can feel. Anything that you can't feel, that's just visual, that we're not really concerned with. Yeah.
But conceptually, though, a stain is probably the penultimate blia. So whether or not you feel it, or can remove it, you know it's there.
Right. I hear what you're saying. How can you ignore it?
But you don't have to remove the stain. You have to remove
right.
The
bleed. Right. So halachically speaking, we assume that hagala works. So whatever absorptions, and again, absorptions are not something. These bleos are not something this is not a scientific issue. You know what I mean? If a scientist would come to us tomorrow and say, listen, you know, I'm religious, I went through the sugyas in Chulin, and I've done testing on pots and pans, and I don't find any absorptions, you know, or I found a metal type of pot that doesn't absorb anything. We would tell him, that's great for the laboratory, but it's still treif. You know, it's still fleishiks or milchiks or treif. You know, these blios are a halachic reality. It's not necessarily, we're not necessarily bound here by the scientific facts, because that's not what the halacha was concerned with.
And the act of hagola is just dipping it in and immersing it completely, and you take it out immediately, it's done.
Yes, so we'll talk about it. We'll talk a little bit more about that, yeah.
In that case, if you were saying with the spoon and the meatballs,
right.
The meatballs are still good, no?
Yes, in that particular shaila, the meatballs are still good, assuming a few things, and again, that's a little bit of a tangent, but I'll just mention it. Number one, if the milchik spoon that you stuck in was an eino ben yomo, right, which means that it had not been used for hot milchiks in the last 24 hours, so then any milchig blios that are in that spoon are considered pagum, and when they come out into your meatballs, bidieved, right, we don't use a milchik spoon lechatchila, obviously, but bidieved, you know, post facto, we're not concerned with those blios coming into your meatballs. If it's a ben yomo spoon, then you have a little bit more of a problem. Meaning if you just, you know, oh, well, the spoon was sitting on your counter because you just stirred your milk hot soup, and now you take it and you stir your fleishik meatballs, that's a little trickier. And then it would depend on bittel. Then you would need 60 times, the meatballs, connected the spoon, that gets a little bit trickier. But if it's an eino ben yomo, then it's certainly then the meatballs are certainly fine. The spoon is treif, but the meatballs are certainly fine. But if it's a ben yomo, it gets a little trickier. Yeah.
Is it problematic that the absorption comes out of the utensil and goes into the pot, and now the utensil is still in the pot?
Good. We'll talk about that. Good point. We'll talk about that. That's what we're coming to. Okay. Now, in terms of removing this residue, it's important to recognize that this is only a requirement when it comes to hag'alah. When we talk about libun, using a flame to kasher something, okay? So either using an open flame, using a blowtorch, you know, I'm sure you've seen pictures of people, you know, in industrial kitchens kashering an oven with a blowtorch or something like that. So when you do that, when you're kashering with libun, it's not necessary to remove all of that residue, because libun works with a little bit of a different mechanism, which I'll just mention briefly now. We'll talk a little bit more about it later. But essentially, libun is not being used to expel the blios that are in the walls of this kli. But libun is actually just going in and burning them up. You're just destroying them. It's like a search and destroy mission. You know, that's essentially what libun is. So hagala right now, and again, things will get a little bit more tricky later, but hagala really is you're expelling the blios from the kli, and libun is really just destroying them. You're just going in with that open flame and you're burning them out and you're destroying them. So therefore we're not as concerned with the residue that's on there, because if the flame can burn out the blios, the flame is certainly going to, you know, nullify and burn out any residue that's on the surface of that kli. That you should still clean it. Don't you know, you can't kasher a dirty kli. But you know, you clean it. But if there's a little something on it, you don't have to be so concerned. In fact, sometimes there are kalim that people want to do hagalah to that sometimes are hard to clean. Either they have very, you know, fine crevices, you know, they have cracks or crevices, and it's hard to really get in there. You know, you never know what's in there. There might be some residue stuck in these cracks or crevices. Knives very often are hard to clean because of the serrations in the knife. And very often, what a Rav will do, who's supervising the Hagalah process, is that he'll do a quick libun on those areas. You know, he'll take a flame, either from the stovetop or a blowtorch, or, you know, I mean, you have to be a little bit careful. You know, you don't want to destroy the kli, but he'll you know, you'll burn out that area, so then you can, you know, if you just do libun on that one area where the cracks and the crevices are, then you can do Hagalah on the rest of the kli, and deal with the absorptions. So that's something that's important to do. Okay. Now, Steve raised a good point that what happens here when I do hagala, right? What's the mechanism of hagala? So we just discussed, based on the shach, what he quoted from the ra'a, that the mechanism of hagala is I'm sticking it, I'm immersing it in this boiling hot water, and now the blios are, you know, being expelled from my kli. But now Steve points out they're sitting in the pot. Right now, all those treif blios are now sitting in this pot that I'm using. Okay, so that's the problem here. And let's see, how some of the Rishonim deal with this issue. By the way, before I begin, when we talk about kashering, and again, Pesach is a little bit of a different story. We'll talk about Pesach as we get closer to Pesach. But let's say I'm just koshering this treif spoon. You know, I treifed up a spoon, I took this milchik spoon, I stirred my meatballs, I treifed it up, and now I want to kosher that spoon. So technically speaking, I can use any gender pot to kosher that spoon, okay? But what we are makbid to do is wait and make sure that the pot is an eino ben yomo, okay? So make sure that the pot that you're using to kosher is an eino ben yomo. So I haven't used that pot with something hot in 24 hours, okay? So then any blios that are in that pot are certainly going to be pugum, and then we're not so concerned when those pugum blios are going to come out into the water. You know, we're not concerned about that. Yeah.
It's just going to Pesach for a split second.
Yeah.
So, based on what you said, you could kasher, let's say, silver bathers after you silver polish, you clean them physically. Okay? You could take a chametz, take a pot, that has a ben yomo, and do that goal in that.
Okay. Technically speaking, you're right. Okay. But we're more machmir when it comes to Pesach.
So we
don't use a chametz tik pot. We use a Pesach tik pot. Now, again, I don't want to get too involved in this. Exactly. So what we do is, and again, this is because of the chumrah of the Pesach. When it comes to Pesach, we have a lot of chumras. But because of the chumrah of the Pesach, so what we do is we either use a Pesach tik pot, but then the poskim say that if you want to use that pot, you have to then kasher the pot. Okay? So either use a Pesach tik pot and then kasher the pot. Okay, okay. Or what you can do is what I always suggest in my Pesach shiurim before Pesach. This is what I personally do: is you buy a koshering pot. I have a koshering pot in my house for Pesach, and I just use it for koshering. I went to Amazing Savings. I bought the cheapest pot they had, and I just and every year that's I write on it koshering. You know, so I know not to use this for any food, and that's my koshering pot. And I use that every year for koshering all my things for Pesach. It's not chametz tik, it's not Pesach tik, it's nothing. It's just a koshering pot. That's the best thing to do. You know, it's the safest, so to speak. And nowadays, you can buy a cheap pot and keep it from year to year. It's relatively easy to do that. You can use a Pesach tik pot, but then you have to kosher the pot if you want to use it. Again, all because of chumrah de Pesach. Technically, theoretically, you're correct. But in terms of the chumrah, we're makbid to do that.
Why would you have to kosher? I'm not talking about Pesach. I'm talking about the
yeah.
Why would you take a pot to do the Haggadah.
Right.
So what, and the blios then come out into that pot. So why would right. you have to then kosher that pot? That's
what okay, so let's talk a little bit about that now. Let's talk about that now, okay? So what happens when I kosher something, right? What happens when I kosher something? So there's a few different ways of expressing what happens that we find in the Rishonim, okay? On the one hand, we have the Shibole Haleket, okay? The Shibole Haleket, he was a student of Rashi, quotes many of the Psukim of Rashi. And in source number 7, the Shibole Haleket writes that Shekol Zman Shamayim Roschim, that as long as the water is boiling, and we know that the water has to be boiling, it has to be a rolling boil when you kasher, you know, when you immerse some things. And I've seen this also, sometimes people kasher things and they, you know, the water's hot, but it's not a rolling boil. It's a problem. It has to be a rolling boil. It has to be really boiling in order to kosher it. And especially if you keep dunking in cold silver, it's going to cool it off. So what the places that really have their act together do is they have two pots. They have two pots and they keep one covered. Okay, I was in a kitchen once that had a real good Haggadah operation going before Pesach, and they had these two huge pots. They kept one covered. And they would use the other one. And when the other one started to cool down, they would take the cover, put it onto that one, and then use the one that was boiling. So that way they would keep alternating pots, so that whatever pot they were using was always at a rolling boil. So it has to really be boiling. I've seen people kasher in hot water, which is not boiling. That's not a good Haggadah. Haggadah has to be really in really boiling water. So, but writes the Shibole Haleket, that as long as the water is boiling, listen to what he says, Ein kli shebesocho bolea elapolate. He says a rolling boil only allows the kli that's inside to expel its blios, but not to absorb the blios. Now again, these are not scientific facts, right? These are halachic realities. But that's what the Shibole Haleket writes, that as long as it's boiling, it's expelling its blios, but it's not absorbing from the water that's surrounding it. Okay? So now that solves Steve's issue. That, okay, so the treif blios are coming out of the spoon, and now even though it's in the contaminated water, so to speak, right? Even though it's in this contaminated water, but it's okay because as long as the water is boiling, it will not absorb those blios. Now the problem is if you leave it in there and you turn off the fire and now the water stops boiling, it sounds like the only thing that stops the blios is the boiling. But once it stops boiling, now you just have yad soledah, you know, treif water. Now the spoon is sitting in there, so according to the Shibole Alekin, it's going to get treif. So that's why, you know, you don't leave it in there until it stops boiling. But according to Shibole Alekin, the boiling actually stops the absorption process and just allows for the plita, just allows for that expelling process. Now again, but not all the Rishonim express themselves this way. It's interesting to see, you know, the different ways that the Rishonim express what's going on here halachically.
The water would have to be poured out while it's still boiling.
Right, so according to the Shibole Alekin, you should really pour out the water while it's boiling. Yeah, you know, like right away, you take it off and you just dump it out. You know, that way it won't have a chance to treif anything up. Or according to him, once it stops, excuse me?
Or you keep it boiling
and remove the spoon. You know, but then it might treif up the pot once it stops boiling. You know, if you turn off the fire and you let it cool down, it's going to treif up the pot. So, you know, so the Shibole Alekin would be concerned about that, right? Now, Tosfos in Avodah Zarah, he happens to be talking about chametz, but it doesn't really matter for our purposes because you see the mechanism that he's that he's referring to in source number 8. And he writes at the very end, where it's underlined in source number 8, he writes that when you stick this chametz stick, you have a chametz stick plate, and you're sticking that, you want to kash that, you're sticking it into a pot of boiling water. So he writes that you're sticking a chametz ba'ke'ara, right? The chametz is now in this plate. Umimenu l'mayim. Now the chametz is now being expelled. The absorptions are now being expelled into the water, the boiling water of this pot. He writes, uminamayim chozer v'nivla ba'kara. So he writes that when it comes to those blios, they actually will get reabsorbed into the plate because they're sitting in this contaminated water. He doesn't believe in this mechanism of the Shibole Alekin that as long as it's boiling, it's preventing the blios. He doesn't buy that. So he says, like Steve said, it's sitting there. It's going to get recontaminated. Now, when it comes to chametz, and again, chametz is not our issue. When it comes to chametz, that's okay because it's essentially at that point. It's not barnat de hetera, because chametz, again, when you're kashering for chametz, it's mutter, right? The chametz is not usher yet. You can't kasher on Pesach, right? You're kashering before Pesach. So the chametz is mutter, and it's not barnat. It's a secondary taste at this point, because the whatever chametz blios were in that plate are coming out of the plate into the water, and then they're going from the water back into the plate. So they're already secondary heter blios, and we know not barnat de hetera is mutter. So that's why we're not concerned about that when it comes to chametz. However, when it comes to treif, we have a problem. Because if you have a spoon that's treif, according to Tosfos, if you have a spoon that's treif, and now I stick it into boiling water, okay, and now those blios are now coming out into the water, and the water is now contaminated, and according to Tosfos, the spoon is just gonna absorb those blios right back in. So how do you deal with that, according to Tosfos? So that's why what we do in order to resolve this issue of Tosfos, we make sure that when you kasher something, it should also be an Eino Ben Yomo, meaning the spoon itself should be an Eino Ben Yomo. Meaning don't kasher the spoon right away. If you just used it to stir the treif meatballs, you know, clean it off. Wipe it off with a cloth or run it under cold water just to clean it off. Okay, you don't want it to sit with that schmutz on it, so you clean it off, but then let it sit for 24 hours, so now any blios that are inside are eino ben yomo. Once they're eino ben yomo, so now when you stick it into that pot, that we're not concerned about. The eino ben yomo blios coming out and going back in, that's okay. That we're not concerned about. But if it's a ben yomo, you have a problem, because Steve's right, you have a problem. It's sitting in that liquid. In fact, what the Rishonim say is that if that spoon is a ben yomo, what you really need is you really need at least 60 times the volume. If you have a big pot that has 60 times the volume of the spoon, so then it's also okay. Because then whatever blios are coming out of the spoon are going to be bottled in the water, right? Because you have 60 times the water corresponding to that spoon. So whatever blios are going to be bottled in the water. So now you have blios that are bottled in the water. If that's going back into the spoon, that's okay. Because that's heter now. It was bottled.
Why can't the concept of bottle washisha, why can't you evoke that, or instead of the spoon being the object, the blios?
Okay, so you can.
The blios are always going to be bottle washisha.
Yeah, okay, so now, so,
I mean, it's,
okay,
it's
you're touching on something that's important. You're touching on an important point. You're correct, but there's one little issue that we have to rectify. You're right, we are being mevatel the blios. However, from a halachic standpoint, when I take a spoon, and this is a concept that's discussed, that you're touching on a very important concept which is discussed in Yerodea, but when I take a spoon and I stir, I take a milchik spoon and I stir these treif meatballs, how much of that spoon is full of blios? Right? So halachically speaking, we actually view it as though the entire spoon is full of blios.
It's one big blio.
Exactly. And again, scientifically, that obviously can't be because it's metal. So, you know, how much can it absorb already? But from a halachic perspective, we don't know exactly how much is there, and therefore we assume that the entire spoon is one big blio. It's full of blios. So that's why you really need to be mevatel the entire volume of the spoon. That's really in that kind of a case. There are certain cases where we can get away with less, but generally speaking, that's the rule when it comes to Isser.
There can be cases where part of the spoon is didn't go in.
Yeah, exactly right. Those are more complicated.
Yeah.
Those are more complicated. We're trying to cover the basics here, but those are more complicated cases. Okay, so that's the approach of Tosfos and Avodah Zarah. Now, interestingly, Tosfos and Chulin has a little bit of a different approach. And Tosfos and Chulin, the way that they describe what's going on here is that first the pot, or let's say the spoon that you're doing the Haggalah on, you're doing the Haggalah on the spoon, first the spoon absorbs. That's what it does first. Okay? So you stick a spoon into this hot, boiling hot water. First, the spoon absorbs from the boiling hot water. Once it's, if you look at the language of Tosfos in source number 9, which is underlined, he writes, whatever, the water, there might not be anything in there, but whatever, you know, it absorbs water, whatever. La'achar shesaveya chozer upolate. So the language of Tosfos is that first it absorbs, once it's reached now its maximum absorption, right? It's now saturated. Good. It's saturated. It's now maximally absorbed. So now it begins. Now it begins to expel the blios. That's the mechanism that Tosfos in Chulin writes, which is also an interesting way. The fourth way of describing what goes on, and this is perhaps the most strange, and the most fascinating, and we don't paskin this way, but it's a very, very, you know, kind of peculiar way of viewing it. But the Ritva in Chulin actually writes that the expelling of the blios doesn't happen until after the boiling stops. Okay, very interesting way. If you look at what he says, he writes where it's underlined, Umiflat lo polit klum ba'ochayora rosachatz ad denayich mirisichasa. You have to stick it into boiling water. The boiling water almost conceptually loosens up the blios, but they don't come out yet. And now once the boiling stops, you turn off the flame, you know, the water's cooling down a little bit, the boiling stops, that's the point where it begins to expel its blios. Okay?
It's like the antithesis of
Everything.
Keep it boiling.
Correct, it is. And that's why we don't pass them like this. We don't hold like this ritva. But it's a very interesting ritva. And the ritva writes in the next line that if you want to kasher something, it's exactly the opposite of what we say. You have to get it to a rolling boil, put it in, and then leave it there, take it off the fire, and leave it there until it cools down. Not totally cools down, but until the boiling stops. Once the boiling stops, that's when it expels its blios, and now it's kasher. Again, we don't paskin like this ritva, but it's a very interesting way of looking at it, you know, kind of a totally different perspective. Okay. Now, until now, we've been assuming that the way that Haggalah works is by being polate, expelling all of those blios that are inside. There is one Rishon who understands Haggalah in a different way, the whole mechanism of Haggalah in a different way. And this is the Kolbo. Okay, the Kolbo writes, in source number 11, on the second side of the page, he writes, V'yesh omrim, shahamayim aroschin, hein kimo eish shesorev. He writes that the boiling water works mechanically the same way that we discussed Libun works. Just like libun, you take the fire and the fire burns out the blios. It doesn't get the blios to be expelled. It doesn't get the pot to expel the blios. But if the fire goes in and burns it out, right, destroys the blios, that's how he understands what the boiling water is doing as well. Unlike everyone else that we've discussed until now. Okay? I saw an interesting, there's a sefer called Hagolas Kalim, which is a very thick sefer about this, you know, it's like this thick. And has incredible wealth of information all about Hesher Kalim and Hagalas Kalim based on the sugyas, and the footnotes are like incredible, just how many sources he quotes. So he wants to suggest that maybe this machlokus of how you understand how the mechanism of how Hagala works, are we expelling the blios or is the water just burning out the blios, much like fire? He wants to understand that this is dependent on that machlokus that we had earlier, how to understand the wording in the pasuk of kol asher yavo va'esh, kol davar asher yavo va'esh tavir va'esh v'taher. So he suggests that if you understand like Rashi, that kol davar asher yavo va'esh is referring not only to an open flame, but also to something that's used with hot liquid, hot water, right? That's va'esh is referring to everything. So essentially Rashi's equating Hagala and Libun. So he suggests that maybe, according to that understanding, that the pasuk of Kol Davar Sheyavo Va'esh is equating Hagala and Libun. That means that mechanically they work the same. How are Hagala and Libun working? They're both going in and burning out the blios. They're not expelling the blios, they're burning them out, they're destroying them. But if you understand that Kol Davar Sheyavo Va'esh is not referring to both of them together, is only, let's say it's only referring to an open flame. And Hagala we learn out from Kibolo Kach Polto, you know, we learn, the Gemara learns that out, but it's not explicit in the Pasuk of Kol Davar Sheyavo Va'esh. So then he suggests, then maybe you can understand that that mechanically the two are working differently. That maybe Eish, you know, Libun, is really going in and burning out the Blios, whereas Hagala is expelling the Blios. An interesting way that he kind of frames this Machlokis, and perhaps it's dependent on those two approaches. The last issue, just in the last 2 minutes, that I want to discuss is that right after you do Hagala, by the way, it's important to know also, Hagala does not have to be done all at once. So if I have a spoon, for example, I don't have to drop my spoon into the pot of boiling water. What I can do is I can hold one end of the spoon, dip it in halfway, okay? And you keep it in, we keep it in there for a couple of seconds, even though technically many of the Rishonim understand as soon as it's in the boiling water, the blios are expelled. But generally we keep it in for a few seconds, 10 seconds, you know, to make sure that it's really hot and that everything is, you know, so to speak, out. And then you remove it, flip it over, and then you can stick the bottom half in. Okay? So you can do it piecemeal, so to speak, when it comes to Hagala. You can get the blios out piecemeal. That works especially well when you have, let's say, a long spoon. Sometimes you have these long spoons or long forks that got treif, and I don't have such a big pot, you know, so I can only stick in half the spoon at once, so that works very well. The last thing I want to mention is that the tour in, it actually appears in Hilchos Pesach, quotes in the name of Rashi, this is a famous shita of Rashi, that right after you do Hagala, you have to rinse the item in cold water. Right after you do Hagala, you have to rinse it in cold water. So I took my treif spoon, I did Hagala to it. Now, after I do Hagala, I got to rinse it off in the cold water. Why? Why do you have to rinse it off in cold water? So Rashi, the way that Rashi explains it, is that you have, on the surface of that spoon, you have hot treif water. Because that spoon was in the pot of treif water, okay? So you have hot treif water in that spoon. Now it's true that it's eino ben yomo and everything like that, which we discussed. But Rashi says that you want to try to get that hot treif water off right away. So therefore, right after you do Hagala, you stick it in the cold water and you rinse it off. Many of the Rishonim, right? So many of the Rishonim disagree with this reasoning, and they say they don't understand it because that's the whole thing that we discussed. That if it's eino ben yomo, then it's okay. Or if we have shishim, then it's okay. So what are we so concerned about this residual water that's clinging to the spoon? Why are we so concerned about that? So many of the Rishonim, disagree with the reasoning of Rashi. Although this was an old minhag to do this, and right after you do Hagala, you rinse it off in cold water. Some the Sefer Atruma, which is quoted in source number 30 by the Hagolos Maimonios, quotes that the reason has nothing to do with rinsing off this treif hot water, but in fact the reason is because we're comparing it to kudshim. And there's a halacha of kudshim of umurak v'shutaf b'mayim, that when it comes to kudshim, the pasuk says that you have to rinse it off. Not only do you have to kasher something when it comes to kachim, but you have to actually rinse it off in cold water. So some say that we learn out this rinsing from cold water, we learn it out from kachim. But again, others are not happy with that, because why? That's nice, that's for kachim. The pasuk is talking about kachim. But from where do we see an extension from kachim, you know, to regular chulin that we have in our kitchens, you know, where do we see that extension? So it's not so clear. The Aruch HaShulchan in source number 14 suggests a different approach that none of the Rishonim say. And he says maybe the idea is to actually solidify and strengthen the metal. Because when you heat up metal, it softens a little bit. Right? So you've gotten the blios out. Now when you take that metal, which has softened and has expelled its blios, you take it and you rinse it right away in cold water, that actually hardens the metal, solidifies it, and maybe that's why we have this minhag to do it immediately following the Haggadah process. But the Aruch HaShulchan says, be it as it may, whatever the reason for the minhag is, whether you want to go with Rashi, you want to go with the Shita of the Sefer HaTruma, or you want to take my approach, the Aruch HaShulchan says, either way, this is an old minhag, and it's kedai to do the minhag, even though, you know, it's hard to understand why, but he says it's an old minhag that we do, and therefore you should continue to do it, not only on Pesach. In his time, it's interesting, in his time it seems like it was only done on Pesach, but he says really you should do this minhag all the time. Whenever you kasher something, you should immediately rinse it in cold water. Yeah.
And there's no need for any tefillah mikveh.
Correct. Correct, right. Yeah. Done. Correct, yeah. Well done. Okay? We'll stop here for tonight.